Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Welcome to another edition of the Bartholomew Town Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Bartholomew. From our Providence, Rhode Island studios, I sit down with singer-songwriter and promoter Chrissy Stewart. Chrissy Stewart is the founder of PVD Live, a live production operation that hosts local and regional concerts and other events in Providence and throughout Rhode Island. Chrissy brings a contemporary edge to her events and the manner in which they are promoted and reported on, no doubt inspired by her own artistic journey and through her experience as production manager for all-time great singer-songwriter Lucinda Williams. Our conversation touched on Chrissy's backstory, the current state of the city of Providence, as well as thoughts on the future of live events. All right, we are here at the Lofts on Elmwood. That's my name. It's not an official name or anything like that, luckily. Give me some background on PVD Live and where you're at as an artist and a curator and sort of a documentarian journalist in the Providence and greater New England music community.
I started PVD Live about two and a half years ago. And it just came from my love of the community and the music coming out of the city. And I was a concierge for about 6 years around the New England area, but in Providence for about 4 or 5 years. And people would come in, check in, wondering what to do in the city. And I'd be like, oh, just like go to your hotel room, come check in with me. I'll just write down what's going on in the city. And so I'd go to visit every website, and I would write down, you know, shows I recommended, and then send off the hotel guests to a night, and that's where the inspiration came with PVD Live,
That's amazing that you were able to take a service industry gig and use it for research and development of what would be one of your main projects, mm-hmm. You know. Where are you at now? You said it's been about... before we began the interview, you mentioned to me it had been about 2 years before you felt like it really caught on. Now It definitely seems like one of the main gatekeepers and brands, if you will, from the outside looking in and both as a part of the Providence community. So what was that process like of building it up from scratch to
local gatekeeper? So much work, so many hours, so many hours, still wondering where it's going to go. But as I was saying with you starting this podcast, I'm happy for you, and it just, whatever project you're going to start, it takes so much dedication and wondering if anyone is even looking at it or if it's even important, but it took about 2 years just for people to start recognizing it, and, you know, it's still hard work every day, but doing your own thing, it's so rewarding, too, and doing something for a community I love so much is even better.
Right, and filling a void because, you know, there is, unlike some other larger markets, Boston, New York, obviously, and even some other smaller markets, you seem to be, you know, you're not the only person doing what you're doing, which is a kind of blend of curation and reporting, if you will. Mm-hmm. But you're one of the main people who are doing it for sure. What do you work with venues? Do you have a specific relationship with venues or other publications that, you know, has kind of formed your identity at this point? Like any specific things you do?
Yeah, so I've been booking The Grange for about 4 years now. And so now whenever I book either at Dusk or Columbus or other venues, now it's PVD Live Presents. So
that or kind Newport of, Blues Cafe.
That's you're now doing my identity.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Newport Blues Cafe. We're a sponsor for the Z Boys residency there every Thursday. So that's another leap into the Newport area, which is exciting, and it's starting to grow. And it's not just me now; it's my good friends Sarah Goodrich and Michael Panico, and they're helping me a lot with content on the site and booking. And now, yeah, it's kind of becoming much larger than me, and I'm just seeing where it flies.
Yeah, it's always fun when a project loses. You know, you can almost imagine, like, lawyers would probably say, all right, there's a line where there's a point where you are no longer, you know, one with the project. It's a third-party entity, and, you know, I don't know, you could legally classify that as, like, an LLC or whatever, but there's just more of a spiritual way of looking at that. And you feel like PVD Live's there now, where, like, if you left, it would, you know, you could leave it and someone could take it over and
build on it. It's wild. Yeah. And some of even my good friends are like, oh, I had no idea you started that. it's funny.
Totally. You mentioned, or we kind of got into the briefly, the Z Boys at the Newport Blues Cafe. Do you feel like Newport is an extension of the Providence market, or do you feel like it kind of has its own identity and it's you know, the relationship is much like Providence to, say, New Haven or Northampton? Or is it more like Newport is Providence's summer playground?
I see it as my personal summer playground, but I think it has its own identity, not as far as something of Northampton or Boston. I think it's definitely a sibling of Providence. And a part of the intention of PVD Live is also building bridges to the Newport scene, the Boston scene, and bringing in new acts and from those areas, and also having Providence musicians playing in Newport or Boston, and making that kind of bridge of collaboration too. But Newport, I love it, and I'm really excited for the music that's been coming out of it lately. And a lot of, like, the Z Boys residency is bringing more of attention of Providence and, oh, what's going on over there, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And for even myself, like, I never even knew of, who did you have on the other day? Mallory Day?
Mallory Day from Wildlife,
yep.
Yes.
And musicians like that coming to our attention and reaching out and inviting them to come play in the city, you know.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I grew up in, I don't know if you know, I grew up in South County, you know, or that, and went to URI and then moved away to Brooklyn and whatever. And, like, when I was growing up, I'd always go to Providence for shows and whatnot. And, you know, but I never went to Newport in any capacity other than, like, the festivals, like, if my cousin was taking me. Or it's kind of like, all right, this is, like, a funny night. We're going to, like, get, like, wear costumes and, like, go out and, like, all these shot bars or whatever. It was, like, kind of a joke.
Yeah.
I never thought of it as an artistic hub of any nature. And it wasn't until I met Dave Passafiume on a gig in New Haven from now from Los Dudorinos and Tweed Leisure, but at that time from a band called Castle. And I was expressing, man, I'm getting sick of living in New York. I've been here almost a decade, and I'm tired of rent and this, that, and the other. And more than anything, I missed my community in Brooklyn, which had been kind of broken apart by real estate and changes. And Dave said, you know, Newport actually is a place to be right now. I'm telling you, I was like, Newport, man, no way. Like, there's no way I'm going to move from Brooklyn to Newport. Like, maybe Providence. Like, we've been looking at Lofts, but like, there's no way. And when I moved there, that is the closest I've ever been to feeling like I felt in the peak of Brooklyn, as far as just the, it was small. The scale is so much smaller, but there's so many great artists there that.
Yeah, and being a part of it and feeling empowered to make a change and being a part of its creative growth. I lived in Newport for a summer 7 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And it was just filled with cover bands. It drove me nuts. And my go-to was always just Billy Goods. That's where I knew I could kind of feel at home with music.
I miss Billy Goods.
But from there to now, it's just changed completely with the bands that are coming out of there.
Right. It's really refreshing. It's really fun to see and like you say, to be a part of that. And kind of, do you feel like the folk festival, as someone who kind of, you know, is around that community in various ways, I feel like Newport bands are dramatically underrepresented at the festival. Do you see that as all, or are almost entirely ignored with very, you know, maybe not intentionally, but just because they're kind of grouped in, you know, Newport's no different than, in their mind, than maybe like West Warwick if a band's from there. It's just part of Providence.
Agreed.
To call them out on it, but it's, you know, it's noticeable.
I just, last year, PVD Live started working with Jimmy's with Newport Nights, and that was with intention of bringing in bands that are overlooked for the festival and just having kind of our own side thing away from Newport. Blues Cafe is always a great time, but it's always sold out, and just right up the road you can go to Jimmy's at Newport Nights and always see either local bands or in the New England area.
Yeah, it's a great thing.
So we're building that bill right now, and I'm excited about it.
That's really fun.
Yeah,
it's really fun to have those after parties. You know, mm-hmm. we've been able to, with Silver Teeth, we've been able to play a couple of the Tweed Leisure parties and a few others. And although they're unofficial, it's kind of like South by Southwest, where the line's really blurred if you're out in the town, you know, and you don't have a ticket to the one or two or three official events.
Now I'm on this island. And
what are you going to do? I mean, you're going to go have a good time and get an opportunity. So it is still an extremely important weekend for the locals, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where do you see PVD Live heading? Do you see it as becoming more of an interactive website that's you know, you're doing some podcasting yourself and some videos and interviewing Ian Fitzgerald and coffee shops and all these cool things. Do you want to do more of that? Or is that more interactive stuff?
I mean, it's day by day, just running by inspiration, you know, interviews, figuring out what works best. Is it in person? Is it through email or by video? We're going to do something with Roz Raskin for the Nova One show. That will probably be video. And it's just my creative output right now. And so with the future, just booking more shows and highlighting what's going on in the city. So to promote tourism, and Go Providence wants to use us as their music source. So a lot of things just which take a lot of time and finding time, and it's all getting a lot of momentum that I'm excited about.
That's great. Do you feel like you have a working relationship with the city right now? Do you have any kind of relationship with the Alorza administration or PVD Fest or anything like that?
Alorza and I did bike tours. I did one bike tour with him last year, and now Marriott is using PVD Live as bike tours now. So that will start in June. So that's another thing that's exciting. So it's not, now it's branching beyond music, and now it will be a personal bike tour with someone that's visiting the city, and I can show them everything I love about it. And, you know, it's tough because you go on right now, like Go Local or Go Providence, and they do highlight a few things, but if you have 3 days in the city, you might leave without seeing its true charm, and it can be a hidden gem, which is lovely about Providence because it's a little mysterious too, but it's tough in so many days to see its magic and potential by just skipping over it.
Right. I'm a child of the Providence Phoenix. In fact, I had Ian Donis in here, who was one of the great political writers for the Phoenix, just a few days ago, and it was such an important document for me. Growing up out in the woods in South County, you'd go to the Rippey's liquor store. They'd have it there for me every Thursday, and that was my source. And it was a blend of shows and political content and humor and film and all these aspects of, you know, just kind of grouping together like-minded people, just sort of like throwing spaghetti at the wall in a way of like, hey, you'll have a shot at meeting people or being around a community that's going to fit your way of thinking. Mm-hmm. With the Phoenix gone now, I mean, I was going to say out of business, it doesn't exist at all. Even the remnants of it, you know, it feels like kind of with your lifestyle approach, you have a kind of set up to fill that void, you know?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, that, and it's with intention to embrace all corners of Providence. You know, we just had a PVD Live meeting yesterday and comedy came up, and, you know, just trying to cover it all. So,
yeah. And there's an interesting mayoral race going on right now in the city as well. Some interesting candidates challenging Mayor Alorza from the left. And we've had Kobe Dennison here in particular, and he has some very specific ideas. In fact, like the fourth thing on his platform is about live enhancing live music, and his goal is he wants 7 days a week to have live music happening downtown, and there's tax incentives for venues that would have stages and all kinds of things like that. So it's interesting right now. I'm hopeful that even if he's not elected, that it'll push the agenda towards us having more of an opportunity.
I gotta sit down with this guy.
Yeah, he's an interesting character. Yeah.
Downtown, it's tough too. You walk by the Alex and Ani Center and you're just like, I want some more stuff here. But they have the Burnside Park music series and a lot of great things in the summer too. So
yeah, totally. What was interesting to me, and it still remains fairly true, is that when I'd pick up Gabrielle at RISD or Brown or whatever, and I'd be coming from Newport before we moved up here, so this past semester, if you will, and I'd notice as I approached Providence at like 5 o'clock, I'd have no trouble whatsoever getting into the city, getting off at exit 19 and driving right downtown, pulling up with a parking spot outside of RISD at 5 o'clock. On the other hand, every artery, was completely clogged, total pandemonium. Everyone is doing everything they can to get out of Providence at 5 o'clock. And that's something that struck me as like very severe. And you do see that there's like a lot of empty places that there should be more activity. Do you feel like PVD Live has, or you as an artist, do you feel like you want to tackle that somehow, like make Providence more vibrant?
I think anyone that's lived here for a while and has fallen in love with it feels a responsibility to be a part of its growth if you see what's happening. And PVD Live has been a part of my contribution and, just feeling empowered and excited to be a part of it. Yeah, so absolutely.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Let's turn to your music, because I just heard a new track that you sent over to me, a voice memo. And what is it about voice memos that's... like, why do they sound better than the demos that we make in studios?
It's the one I sent you. It's so special to me because it's also a memory of just at the Beach House figuring out some lyrics and then running through it the first time, and that organic first time try, and loved everything about it. And then you go into the studio and try to repeat it, and you're like, no, it's not that voice memo. But it's the memory of when the song is just first born, and it's just that simplicity too.
Yeah, you're not overthinking it. You're
or
really
overproduced or overthinking it. Yeah.
Yeah, you're going with your gut. It's very raw.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's the way music's recorded a lot now. It's a struggle that I have. Is always going back and forth between, all right, should we make this record with a click track, and all right, then we'll do the traditional, we'll build drums and bass, and or should we go into a room and play it, and it's tough to choose sometimes, but I don't know.
Yeah, and what I sent to you, Tired Heart Talking, it's just with voice memos, it's just the raw version of it. And you can't really get that again. And I'm so excited to hear what it will be in a studio. But I hold close the voice memos.
Right. Until you can match
it. The first draft. Yeah.
Yeah. Until you can match that energy, right? And then re-energized or whatever.
Yeah.
What's next for your music plans? I know you played the Columbus fairly recently. Is anything coming up? Or?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's all new for me right now. I was on tour this past summer with Lucinda Williams as production manager. And just watching her kill it every night and being inspired by that, I came home and I just sent like a simple text to my friend Jonah Tolchin with not even thinking anything of it. Just, I would love to sit down and, write some of my music with you. And we did. And it's from there. We just sat at my friend's beach house for 2 days and we wrote five or six songs and so easily. And from there, he's now like pushing me to record and now put out an album, and I'm excited for where it's going, and I just never expected that from waking up and just shooting a text.
It's awesome. You got to put yourself out there, right?
Yeah, make it happen. Absolutely.
That's really cool. Yeah, I didn't realize you were that new to, not making music, but putting your music out there, I guess,
And even just the Columbus Theater show, that was me trying to book my friend Allie McGurk from Boston. And I just sent Tom an email like, oh, maybe we could have Allie play and Julie Rhodes could open. It'd be a great bill, great match. He's like, oh, you know, Julie's already playing 2 weeks prior, so it looks like you'll have to do it. And I'm like, no, that's not what I was trying to do. You know, so it's all of my friends just really like pushing me off the ledge and, and having me fly. And it's been such an amazing release and having these conversations with myself. Like the Tired Heart Talking is came from last summer. My friend Ben of Low Anthem, he came up and he's like, oh, how's that? How's it going with that guy I met? You know, I'm like, oh, it didn't work out. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm like, no, it's fine. Like, I prefer to be alone. And though the conversation ended with my friend Ben, it then started me kind of calling myself out, like, is that really like how you feel? And, you know, it's no, yeah, of course, you know, I can being alone, I can focus on my work, be driven, focused all my time as myself. And it then concluded with, I think that's just, your heart's just tired. You know? Yeah.
So, and now you have a hit song.
Yeah, maybe.
Really, a hit song to me is like a song that stays around for more than a couple of days. That's a hit in my, it's in your world, you know, your world's what matters. If it's, if it's a song that matters to you, it's like,
yeah. And that's the most important part victory. If I'm going to do the songwriting thing, the most important to me is that I'm expressing my truth and my story, but it's also relatable to anyone that's listening to it. They can gravitate towards it and leave something with it after hearing.
Yeah, just being a mirror of sorts to humanity, right? Yeah. Trying to sort through the human condition. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems, you know, that's like the ultimate task of all artists, I guess. But in songwriting, it's very, you know, so many different, you know, you can, especially if it's live performance, you're seeing the artist's face and emotion. Mm-hmm. It's translating a very sometimes severe reality, but it's essential.
It is essential. I really love what Mallory said in your last podcast of she didn't do it for so long. And, you know, after doing it, she's like, oh, that's why I felt so crazy before, because I was holding this inside.
Yeah, I can completely relate to that as well. You know, essentially, literally, you know what I mean? I think we all can. You know what I mean? I wanted to ask you about Lucindy Williams, you know, so as production manager, where did that come from? Did you... You know, did you wake up one morning and you were on the road basically running?
As most things in my life, I'm just like, oh, I guess this is happening. I know, I just fall into it. But no, my friend Libby Rose was helping produce a festival down in Georgia called High Water Festival. And she asked for my help for the kickoff party the night on the Friday. So I flew down there and I helped with it. And Lucindy Williams was working and performing that party. And I worked with her manager before because I'm also the artist liaison for Rhythm and Roots Festival, and she played the summer before that. Mm-hmm. So I was just setting things up, and, you know, it was kind of a shoulder bump with the tour manager. He's like, Chrissy? I was like, Matt, you know? And I was first like, how do you remember me? You're in a different state every day. and that was a year ago, you know? And he's like, what are you doing? I was like, oh, I'm just... He's like, aren't you Rhode Island? I was like, yeah, but I'm down here helping out. And... we caught up a little bit, but at the end of the night, I was like working out the money with merch for him. And he was like, you know, so-and-so is moving to Wilco. We have a slot open and we're looking for someone easy to work with and fun. And like started saying all these things indirectly. I was like, are you indirectly asking me on tour right now? He's like, if you'd be down, like if you wouldn't mind. I was like, what am I? But I was just like, yeah, I think that'd be a great experience, you know? And and yeah, a couple months later, I was on the road with them.
What was your day-to-day, you know, kind of just the gist of what you did in that role as production manager? Was that the full tour production, or was that more of a stage-oriented role?
It was mostly assistant to tour manager, so whatever he needed. But for, yeah, it was everything. I woke up at 9 in the morning, I'd jump into the venue, you know, make sure everything was there necessary for Lou in the dressing rooms, and make sure everything that she wanted for food and drinks, and then set up the merch table, go through money of merch the night before, making sure the bus was clean, everything from making sure she woke up on time to getting ready to And then the crazy time would be probably an hour before she went on stage. Tom, her husband, who's also her manager, would text me the set list. And then I'd be going through her huge books of lyrics, which are like these huge binders, maybe 300 songs. And I'd just be sweating, flipping through, like trying to put... Because if you see Lucinda perform, she now performs with her lyrics in front of her. So
is that right? Yeah.
Putting the book together, putting it on stage, and then taking the deep breath when she goes on and be like, all right, it's all done.
It's there. Yeah.
But then you think it's, you can watch a few songs, but then you're like, all right, now she's on stage. Now I have to go and like order after show food, get new ice on the bus. And now like, you know, there's just always something to do from when you wake up at 9 to... And then after the show, Lou likes to hang out, you know, so you can't go to sleep. she really likes to decompress with her team, her family, you know, basically. And so you're up to like 2 in the morning driving to the next place on the bus and hanging out, which is fun, but also a part of the job, you know, being
for sure.
there for her. Yeah.
Very interesting. Yeah. She's undeniably one of the great living singer-songwriters, from the United States. I think you could probably make an argument worldwide. She'd make a top 25 list, certainly 50. So what was it like to be an artist yourself
and spend day after day with her? She's rock and roll alive and well. I mean, you don't get as real as that. And she's also still a kid at heart, you know, like, and it was amazing too to see after like this woman who's 60 plus doing this for so long, still had her meltdowns before going on stage as most performers, you know, having that insecurity and, then, you know, coming off stage and, you know, I'm sorry, you're like my baby sister, I was such a bitch, you know, like having those moments too. And also it was really cool to have moments where she'd talk to the guitarist and drummer on the bus and be like, I wrote a new song, and them being like lit up, you know, just so excited, and being there for those moments were so amazing. And
yeah,
but then she'd start like drinking hard and dancing and be like, wow, you know, like she's still
rock and roll
going. Yeah, yeah, totally.
And what an amazing band she has. I've gotten to see them a bunch of times.
Yeah.
And I just love her band, the way they perform. Yeah. I think it probably I saw them when I was like in, I don't know, high school or whatever, and I think that's where I was like, all right, I gotta wear black all the time and be, you know, do, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like whatever. Just such an important act.
And they're such sweeties too. They're great people to travel with.
You can feel that, you know, that they're
actually
good people.
The inspiration to start writing was a letter Butch gave to me at the last day of tour.
Mm.
So yeah, it was
amazing.
Kind of in a nutshell, just you're a vitality and an energy force, and you're the only one that can deliver it into the world, and it's not up to you. No artist is satisfied. It's you just have to express it, and it just made a big impact on me.
Great.
Butch Norton, the drummer. He's, brother.
What was your favorite show out there? Did you have a particular night that was great?
There was a show in Utah, which was one of the first. It was called The State Room. That was one of the first shows. And every night had its own special kind of magic to it, but I knew just how important she was to her fans, because there was this grown man. He looked like he just got off a motorcycle, and you know, just very masculine and hard. But I saw him front row and center, just looking up at her and just water falling out of his eyes. You know, it's just that was a beautiful moment. And I'm like sitting Indian style behind an amp, like stage left, and just like this little kid just so excited, you know. And that's also, they call me the kid because all these guys on this bus had about 25 plus years on me, but Lou would just like go over and look at me behind the amp, just smile and like blow me a kiss. And
I that is an incredible feeling. I had a similar experience with a great songwriter, and not a top 100, but you know, a great songwriter probably, Pat Green. And I was at one of his shows at Terminal 5 in New York, and side of stage, and just, yeah, you could see that front row and those people of all different walks of life that, you know, were just like, yeah, just totally drenched in tears and amazement at this, like, 56-year-old dude that's just a songwriter. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, you leave there feeling like, you know, shit's real, man.
Yeah. And then also she played Wolf Trap in Virginia the same day as everything was happening in Charlottesville that day.
Wow.
So I remember being in my dressing room watching what was happening with the protests, and that was the day that the car went through the crowd.
Yeah. Fucking horrible
just,
day, man.
Just like crying, and like Lou and I texting each other because she was on the bus. She doesn't leave the bus until like going on stage, but her and I just talking about it, and then her going on stage and talking and addressing it, which was a very powerful moment. And just the fact that we were in Virginia on tour when this happened in Charlottesville, it was wild.
Yeah. Did you feel like, you know, the tour was kind of like a spokespersons for good, you know, in the face of evil?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The light and dark
and being on tour
corner.
With people that like-minded people that have the same view was something I was very fortunate to have.
What's kind of shifting gears here, what's your favorite aspect of the Providence or Rhode Island music scene? Is there, you know, like, what's the most charming part about it? What's the thing that draws
it's
you in so,
so
much?
So diverse, but everyone's so supportive of all different genres. At least that's the view that I have. And it's because it's small, it's easy to work together and collaborate. And I just have so many special memories of so many talented people. And we do a lot of house shows at the Grove, which is something that's very special to me. My brother and I have been doing that for about 7 years now. And bringing people together is very important to us.
You think Providence is kind of uniquely positioned because of its size and diversity here?
Yeah, and traveling around, I might just be passing through cities, and just like someone passing through Providence might not see the magic that I see, but when I come back here, I feel it entirely, and it's something different than what I experience in other cities.
And you mentioned your beach house scenario and South County. You know, how much time do you get to spend down there?
My family has a place at Roy Carpenter's in Matunik. So.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, so the Ocean Mist and that whole area, that is such a special place for me, and so many memories. And
yeah,
that whole area is. And also, my friend Sean Spellman is really bringing a Music City right now to Westerly.
Incredible. We're going to play the Knickerbocker through his Westerly Sound series, and
he's
I hope
doing
to get
a lot
him
of
on
work
here
down
on the show.
Yeah,
it's expanding. You know, you do see a lot of great stuff in Newport, as we discussed. Obviously, Providence, and then South County. The Ocean Mist has always been there, but now you have the Pump House as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
and then down to Westerly, you have last 2 years, I guess, the festival at Willcox Park, and
yeah,
now this,
I worked that. Yeah,
this full
fun.
Series here. Mm-hmm. And Rhode Island's kind of like, all right, you know, here we're really using our natural resources to our advantage for the purposes of having places to showcase art and bring community together,
yes.
You know, in more ways than just like kind of the boring ways of the past, you know.
So. And he's bringing great acts, just like the lead singer of Head in the Heart played down there, and then he played at Island Studio, and then there's another Bridge of Exchange, you know, and
yep.
I have some friends playing Westerly Sound in July, and then hitting me up from Philly or New York, and then trying to stop in at Providence as well. So,
yeah, because there's a 45 to 60 minute separation there, so there certainly are. It's almost like you can legitimately play two shows mm-hmm. in Rhode Island, which at one point would have been unheard of, and
right.
It is completely legitimate now that you can. Really, you could almost make an argument you could play three and go over the bridges and you know, maybe do a show at Galactic Theater.
Yeah,
and, you know, there's angles here that have that weren't there 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, so. PVD Live's trying is starting to book shows at Galactic too. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Who are some of the other promoters that you work that you see in the town? You know, they got Rob Duguay out there and Top Five Fiend.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Delahanty is an old friend. Sure, he's always been going hard. And Tom Wayman, he's bringing so many great acts. Michael Panico, Rick of Studio Blue is such an amazing person in the music community. And I was just at Studio Blue last night talking about potential venues, new venues. And I covered most. I'm trying to think if I'm forgetting anyone.
That's a healthy list. So you know, no one should feel bad if they're left
Rick
off.
Rick of Dusk,
you know?
He's amazing. I love working with him.
I love Dusk.
Yeah, yeah, it's such a gem.
Yeah, so. It really is. It has like an element of it that's unique. You know, it's not anywhere else. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Last question here. If you were involved in the Motif Awards. What is that?
Yeah, that was fun. That was my first year going and checking it out. And I got a nominee, which was awesome and surprising because I don't have anything up yet.
So you were nominated for Songwriter of the Year. Is that right? Or singer?
Americana singer-songwriter. Okay. Brianna White actually got it, which was perfect because I was doing a show for her the next day at the Grange. So
gotcha.
It was perfect how that happened. And I'm so excited and happy for her. She just launched her Kickstarter for her next album. But it's so important, and it holds gravity too, even for myself as a person that's promoting and booking shows for so long in Providence. There was a lot of acts that I was unfamiliar with, so I'm now going to it as a resource on all of the nominees of, oh, okay, I should check this person out and this, and Best Funk and all these different bands.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting thing from, you know, I'm always skeptical of any kind of awards related to music, you know, all the way to the top, you know what I mean? Unless you're talking hard numbers. All right, which tours sold the most tickets? You know, Lady Gaga or Chris Stapleton, who sold more tickets last year on Pollstar? But at the same time, you look, I do understand and the value of highlighting members of the community in some way, you know what I mean? So it's just an interesting thing for me. I've seen it over the last few years kind of looking in on it. I go, I wonder how these are tallied or...
I think it holds true with the votes.
It's real to the votes, in your opinion.
Yeah, and they had a record amount of votes this year of 6,000 or something.
Wow, so they have 6,000 just readers voting for this.
Voting, yeah.
And then they just tally them up
and whoever wins.
All right, well, if that's the case, that is a lot more legitimate than it maybe even seems on the outside looking in, because you always... It's questionable, you know. You want to buy into things, but in this day and age, you're always wondering what the advertising angle, the PR angle for the publication or whatever it is. So it's just, I honestly had no idea what the process was or who was involved in it. So that's great.
And I really love
to hear
how Mike Ryan, I think he's been doing and putting it together for about 10 years now. Mm-hmm. But he started the event by saying this is most importantly to bring the community together and shine a light on the local music scene.
Right.
There's not many people doing that, so I'm excited that he's been so dedicated to it.
Yeah, that is cool.
I know how much work probably goes into it, so.
To tally 6,000 votes, that's...
I'm sure they have some software on the computer. It's not just...
Right. It's not the old ballot. It's not the hanging chads. Yeah. But, exactly. Okay, that's interesting. I'm really glad you got your perspective on that. Yeah, I'd asked a few other people about it as well in the last few days, and everyone was like, you know, kind of like, you're crazy for having any cynicism about this or skepticism about it. It's, you know, I would see it also the Boston Music Awards, things like that. And you just wonder, why do this? Why have an award show? Isn't there a different way to highlight things? You know, shouldn't people just go to shows? You know, I mean, more than anything. But then if it's user generated, then that's awesome. Then it's like, all right, real democracy here. All right. Anything else you'd like to add to the beautiful people out there?
Not at the moment. No, I'm just working on an album. It'll be called House of Christina. And as it's taking more shape and form, hopefully it'll be ready in the next year.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to hear it.
Thank you.
For sure.
Thanks for having me.
Real pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts or your favorite listening platform. You may also follow me on Twitter or Instagram at Bill Bartholomew. As always, thank you for visiting Bartholomew Town. We'll talk soon.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.